Welcome to the cycling podcast coverage of the 2025 Lloyds Tour of Britain, proudly presented by Lloyds. Over the past 18 months or so, Lloyds has developed a deep relationship with British Cycling, sponsoring the two national stage races, the Lloyds Tour of Britain races for men and women, as well as the Great Britain national team and the national championships and national series events across a number of disciplines, including road racing, track cycling, mountain biking and BMX. And over the coming years, Lloyds wants to strengthen that partnership, encouraging people of all ages to get on their bikes to experience the joy of exploring the world on two wheels. Through Lloyds' sponsorship of the best races and riders the country has to offer, they want to inspire the next generation of cyclists to take up the sport either as a leisure activity or a competitive pursuit. And it's thanks to Lloyds that the cycling podcast is able to cover the Lloyds Tour of Britain with daily episodes for the first time this week. We're also at the Vuelta a España, of course. From the Angliru in northern Spain to Burton Dasset in the centre of England, we've got cycling covered thanks to Lloyds. Lloyds, there at every stage. Now on with the important business of Stage 4 of the Lloyds Tour of Britain.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast.
Welcome to the Cycling Podcast's coverage of the Lloyds Tour of Britain with me, Graham Wilgos, and I'm delighted to be back podcasting in the flesh with the man, the myth, the legend, Lionel Burney.
And here we are in Cardiff on a Friday night. And it does feel like the Geraint Thomas farewell party has got started early, doesn't it? Because we're right in the centre of Cardiff here. This is just around the corner from the Millennium Stadium, home of the Welsh rugby team. Lots of Six Nations internationals take place around the corner from here. The Welsh football team play here as well. BBC Wales is just along the road, and the main drag there is kind of hen do, stag do, Friday night parties, a go-go. And even here in our hotel where we are recording, there's a wedding party, and I think they might have got started early, Graham.
Well, yes, and well, I mean, along the strip there, as we've walked in to where we're recording, I think they've been celebrating Geraint Thomas every weekend for the last 20 years. Always exciting to be in Cardiff. We have been elsewhere today, though. Of course, Daniel has been on the Angliru for the Vuelta, but we've had our equivalent has been the Burton Dasset Country Park.
Do you know what? I was really impressed by that today. I absolutely had a fantastic day out on the hill. We'll come to how the stage played out, but the finish there in the country park with the three ascents of the Burton Dasset climb, not the most significant climb in the world, not the steepest, not the longest, but it really animated the race, didn't it? And the crowds up there were fantastic. Considering it's a weekday, people are at work, the schools have kind of gone back as well, but the crowds up there were significant. They were in very good voice, especially the cheers for Geraint Thomas. I mean, this really is the farewell lap of Britain for Geraint Thomas. But the hillside, it was like an amphitheatre, wasn't it? Yeah. Or a stadium effect with everyone stood on the side of the hill there. A real find by the Tour of Britain. I know they've been here before, 2019, and the Women's Tour also in 2019. And, well, the rider who added his name to the Roll of Honour on the Burton Dasset climb, adding his name to Mathieu van der Poel and Kasia Nieuwendamme, was Romain Grégoire of Groupama FDJ. Very impressive.
In it was really a mano-on-mano with another Frenchman, Julien Alaphilippe, in the finale there. But it was that last 500 metres, obviously, where the that kind of final group of strong men got to before the real race was launched. But it was also that last 500 metres where the crowds were really impressive too. And as you say, and we'll get onto it, but that final climb was a bit of a find, and it was great to be out there.
It really was. Yeah, I mean, we set off this morning. Well, I set off from Not Watford. You set off from your home. We met up in Atherston, and as I pulled into the car park in Atherston, it suddenly all came back to me that I'd been there before, because there was a stage of the Women's Tour there in 2021, which I covered with Rose Manley and Lizzie Banks. They had a 10-mile time trial. How British! And Demi Vollering won. And it's a lovely little town, cobbled streets, the
really
little market
charming,
square there, very charming, really kind of made the Tour of Britain feel like a bit of an event today. Only a small town, but the whole town came out. The crowds were great, weather was lovely, and just sort of being here in the flesh again and seeing, you know, Remco Evenepoel just rolling past and somebody saying, "Go on, Remco." You know, it's just a combination of British cycling and continental cycling kind of coming together. And a great start to the stage.
Great start to the stage. And actually on that, on Remco Evenepoel and Julian Alaphilippe just sort of rolling around almost anonymously compared to the reception they would get at the Tour de France. And in a way, that must be a strange come down for them, but maybe quite a nice come down for them in that they can kind of move around freely and you've got, a tenth of the pressure. Just in terms of that kind of, well, not just the level of expectation, but just that because it must be quite a claustrophobic feeling when you're a rider and just being able to move freely before a race like that and not really worry too much other than getting to the start line and getting on with it. It must be great.
Yeah, I mean, if you see Remco Evenepoel racing in Belgium or Julian Alaphilippe at the Tour de France, you know, they are mobbed. They are the national heroes. They have the weight of a nation on their shoulders, and very different here. They're the big stars of the sport, and you know, they were greeted accordingly. But like you say, not quite the sort of claustrophobic reception. And well, maybe that's why we saw the pair of them, you know, really coming to the fore over those three climbs of Burton Dasset.
Yeah, I think that was always going to happen today, wasn't it? So it was the longest stage of the Tour of Britain, longest stage of the race, 186.9, Atherton to Burton Dasset. And as is custom at the Tour of Britain this year, the break went away early with a Team GB rider in it, and it was Joshua Golliker from the Great Britain national team alongside Victor Verculli for Flanders Baloise, Cedric Billions from Lotto, and Q36.5's Rory Townsend. Victor Verculli and Joshua Golliker were the two who contested the first four King of the Mountains sort of spats of the day. Verculli, very impressive, won every single one, beat Golliker into second each time. Verculli coming away with 20 points in total at the end of today, and that was enough to see him in the KOM jersey. So that's what he will start tomorrow wearing. That was the sort of the first part of the race, if you like. That took us up to the first ascent of Burton Dasset.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of game on for the major players.
Yeah, they were still away. And I mean, I was up at the top of Burton Dasset and I'd walked along to around 300-400 metres to go to the line. I found a place on the barriers and I got talking to some locals and they really filled me in on what the main roads were like, and they were really reading the race very well, saying that there's no way anything is going to stay away after the climb, because the main road is undulating, it's wide, it's all going to come back together again, and they will hit the bottom of the climb for the final time all together. And that is basically how it played out, wasn't it? But it was, the four of them were still away the first time up the climb.
Yes.
And as they came past me, the big move went. It was Pavel Sivakov of UAE Team Emirates, Balcom Mollema of Lidl Trek, the veteran rider, Andrew August at the very opposite end of his career for Ineos Grenadiers, I think still only 20, and Remco Evenepoel, the Olympic champion, unmissable in that gold helmet. And there was a real buzz and a sort of murmur of excitement as I realised there was some serious action happening just a couple of hundred metres down the road. And as they came up past us, that little group of four got away. They got away over the top and they joined the leading quartet with about 18.5 kilometres to go. But my local knowledge from my new friend Simon, who was stood next to me, it all came back together again before the second time up the climb.
Yes. And then, well, so I'm going to fast forward to the third and final, and it was Ineos, another Ineos rider, Sam Watson, the British champion, who was the first to sort of lead out, if you like, with 500 metres to go, and that started to separate that final group, if you like. That took us through to Alaphilippe went on the inside, Gregoire decided to go on the outside, and Gregoire, I mean, it was incredibly impressive final couple of hundred metres from him, and if not comfortably, then he really sort of outpowered Julian Alaphilippe on what you'd have to say is a Julian Alaphilippe climb, a classic sort of Alaphilippe climb.
Yeah, Julian Alaphilippe likes a Tour of Britain, doesn't he? He's won it in the past, and he clearly made his move first. I mean, Sam Watson in that national champion's jersey for Ineos Grenadiers really was a kind of the cork in the bottle as that group was coming up, because it's quite a narrow road. So one had to go one side, one went the other side, and there's really only room for one rider on each side to get past, wasn't there, at one point? And as you say, Gregoire had the kick. He's had a very impressive season, hasn't he? Won a stage of the Tour de Suisse earlier on this season. He had a sort of so-so Tour de France, but he was in a break in the final week, I remember, the one to Pontarlier, penultimate day of the race. But he was up there in the early days of the Tour, wasn't he? Fourth in Boulogne and fifth in Rouen, you know, the day when Pogacar and Vingegaard were really going head-to-head. He's a very impressive young rider, only 22 years of age, and he has won the stage and taken the Lloyds Tour of Britain green leader's jersey by just 2 seconds from Matt Brennan. Now, we were speculating about whether Matt Brennan might be able to win the stage today. He wasn't quite close enough to the front to contest it, but he hung in there in that big group of riders just behind Alaphilippe's back wheel, and he is only 2 seconds behind Gregoire overall, with Julian Alaphilippe at 4 seconds, and then it's kind of really bunched up behind. There's still a huge number of riders in contention at 12 seconds. It's down to a race probably of 20 or 30 riders now, I would suggest. But the man of the day, Romain Grégoire, ahead of his much more experienced, more seasoned compatriot Julian Alaphilippe. Should just mention Eduardo Zambanini of Bahrain Victorious was third, and a third Frenchman in the top four, Aurélien Paré-Peintre of Decathlon Âgé d'Auxerre, was fourth. And when we look at that group of riders, it was 20 riders, the last of whom was Bauke Mollema, who'd been in that earlier move, and then the time gap started to open up a bit. Geraint Thomas was in one of the back groups, but like I say, you could hear him coming. He led in a group for 94th place at 7 minutes and 3 seconds, and I just think, you know, sandbagging a bit today, taking it easy, surely he's going to try something over the one of the final 2 days here in Wales, most likely the Cardiff stage on Sunday, I would have thought, but who knows. You know, he's not going to just roll round his final race at a pro, is he?
He's going to honour his lap of honour. Lionel, before we go any further, we should just say that Olav Kooi remains in the points jersey thanks to his two stage wins earlier in the week. Young riders jersey, Romain Grégoire, but Matthew Brennan will wear that again on stage five. And that brings us up to date.
Can we go back to Atherstone again then? Because the little town is famous for something, Graham.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, this is turning the tables. It's usually me that has found an obscure fact. I've got one about Burton Dassett Country Park, but I'm ashamed to say that I did nothing about Atherstone this morning.
Well, it is famous for the Atherstone ball game. Now, this game goes back to 1199. Right, and I guess it's a kind of an early version of football or rugby.
Oh, I do know what this is. It's incredibly violent.
It's incredibly violent. Yeah, it's a kind of a violent version of the Eton Wall game, I guess. And the object, well, the rules have kind of changed. Rules in inverted commas. I'm not sure there are any rules, but the object of the game is who is holding onto the ball at the end of the allotted time. That's how they play it these days in modern times anyway. I'm not sure the records go back to 1199. This year's edition was the 825th. Must make it one of the oldest sporting events in the world. And over the last few years, it has got a little bit violent. Skirmishes have broken out, and you know, maybe some drink is taken before the kickoff. If that's what
it's like, tabloid news violent, isn't it? But it's also completely incongruous with
the bucolic surroundings.
What we saw this morning,
exactly. Yes, you know, a very charming town, and then this the game takes place on Shrove Tuesday, which is in the spring every year. And over the last few years, the local police had said they would withdraw their permission and support for the event if the skirmishes didn't calm down a bit. And apparently this year's event, the 825th, was much better behaved, and it was won by Marcus Cooper. So I don't know what the prize is for the Atherstone ball game, but it doesn't sound like the sort of thing I'd want to get involved in.
It's not one for me either. It's a bit tasty for me.
If we're going to continue the conflict theme, just a few miles away from Burton Dasset, Edgehill, the scene of the first battle of the English Civil War in 1642.
Okay. Well, that fits with the watchtower that was up at the top of the climb today too, because the theory is that that's what the tower was originally built for. I'm going to bring this down to a sort of slightly lower brow sort of fact-finding mission. The other thing that Burton Dasset Country Park, or one of the other things that Burton Dasset Country Park is famous for?
No idea.
Three men and a little lady. A couple of the scenes from the Tom Selleck and, I want to say, Steve Guttenberg film from the early 90s were filmed there.
What trivia. What trivia. I must say, the landscape there was really out of keeping with the surroundings. Now, they're right in the centre of England, and then the hillside, I sort of joked that it was like a big version of a Lynx golf course. The earth had a similar sort of, you know, sandy-ish feel almost, and it was just rumpled, and you can imagine a giant golf ball kind of like finding its way down towards the hole if you set it off from the turret there on the top. Really attractive place, and I mean, I think there's loads of places like this in Great Britain, all across the United Kingdom, that are fantastic places for bike races, and credit to the organisers and also the Sweet Spot Company, which organised the previous incarnation of the Tour of Britain. They discovered it in 2019. And it's, I gather, it is also one of the local cycling club's hill climb venue. So at the end of the season, all the club members, you know, young, old, good, bad and indifferent. You know, the tradition is that everyone takes part in the hill climb at the end of the season. And it takes place on the hill there in Burton Dasset.
Yeah, great. So Lionel, I want to talk about a man that you saw at the start who gave you a warm embrace as well, for a man who doesn't do a warm embrace, and then I saw at the finish at the end.
I don't really do hugging, I must admit, but I did do a hug-style embrace with Theo Gegenhart of Lidl Trek. Haven't seen him for a long while. I always enjoy talking to him about cycling or football or any of the other things that are interesting. He's one of those people who's always got something interesting to say about pretty much every subject. And, well, it's been a funny season for him, hasn't it? Because, you know, he's had his injuries and he's been trying to build himself back up into the Grand Tour star rider we know he can be. He's a former Giro d'Italia winner, of course. He won the 2020 edition of the Giro, but he hasn't ridden a Grand Tour this season. Didn't go to the Giro, didn't get selected for the Tour de France, and wasn't included in the Vuelta team, which I suppose if I was looking from the outside, I would think that was an unusual choice of team selection. But he's here in the Lloyds Tour of Britain, a race that he's got a long, deep history with. I mean, we might talk about this in the next part, but, you know, he rode it as a very young rider for the Great Britain national team, and he is here looking for something over these hilly stages. And I mean, I tried to sort of tease out of him how he was feeling, whether he thought he would be up there today, what it would be like. He was talking mostly about the level of stress in the peloton racing on the British roads, and why, backing up really what Tom Southern was saying a couple of days ago, why every day the breakaway has been basically four riders and no more, because the peloton's too nervous to let six or eight or nine or ten go, because then they would really have a struggle to bring it back under control, even with the hills at the finish, or perhaps especially with the hills at the finish. A bigger group might well have got further into that finale.
Yeah.
Anyway, Theo Gegenhart, I was really keen to see how he would get on today, and he was in that crucial group just behind the front few riders.
12 seconds behind on GC, along with Oscar Onley and Remco Evenepoel. So he's well placed coming into the sort of the business end of the race. And particularly, I think, tomorrow on the tumble, and we will get onto that too, is where things will really start to be decided. As he was with you this morning, he was excellent value with me at the buses this afternoon. He did say too, because we caught up with our colleague young Richard Abraham, and Theo not only made a point of saying hello to you, but he made a point of saying hello to Richard too. So,
very polite young man, isn't he? I also had a hug style embrace with young Richard Abraham as well. I mean,
a hug style embrace, yeah. Yes. I'd hesitate to call it anything warmer than that. Anyway,
the warmth is implied, Graham. Don't worry.
Here's Theo.
Terry Gegenhart, Little Trek, the Mont Ventoux of Warwickshire. How was that today?
I have to be honest, I actually don't know where we are, but it's another nice day this week with family and friends and familiar faces at the finish, so it also doesn't really matter because that's nice.
How did you find the climb, especially in that bunch at the end?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can really call it a climb, it's a bit on the limit. It felt more like a bunch sprint, really. But yeah, it was nice. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. It was definitely beautiful from what I saw during and after. And it looks like my bus driver leaving without me.
It's all right. No. He's giving you the nod. One more.
Yeah.
You're lurking on GC, 12 seconds behind. In terms of your plans coming into the race and where you are now, about right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all on tomorrow, I would say. 99% on tomorrow. Obviously, Gregoire and Julian got some bonuses today and also a small gap, so that will definitely help tomorrow. I haven't done the tumble since 2014 in this race, and cycling has definitely changed a lot since then. But I think it will be, you know, with two laps, it will be a pretty solid race, and Welsh roads are obviously tough and grippy. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't raced in over 2 months since Swiss, so I'm happy to be there about some of the punchy stuff. And tomorrow will be a very different effort, and hopefully a nice final weekend for G and all the peloton and everyone.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Go well. Thanks.
Cheers, man.
Thank you.
Well, that climb at Burton Dashett, more a sprint than a climb, or a climb that was sprinted, or however you want to put it. Tomorrow is going to be a very different type of finale, to a sense of the tumble. We're going to see the rumble on the tumble, aren't we? It's one of the famous climbs of South Wales. We'll probably delve into a little bit of the cycling history from the tumble tomorrow. But the GC, I think, is really well set up here. I do think that Romain Grégoire and Julian Alaphilippe, and maybe even Matthew Brennan, will take some real shifting tomorrow on the tumble. But there's a lot of riders stacked up behind who could well take advantage. There's time bonuses, of course, so it really, you have to condense that GC and the time gaps down even further. But in that group at 12 seconds, you've got Aurelien Paripantra, you've got Oscar Onley, you've got Theo Gegenhart, Remco Evenepoel, even Bauke Mollema. I mean, a rider at the end of his career, but somebody with such pedigree who can get up climbs. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And before all that, whether they risk letting a bigger break go or whether they keep a tight rein on it again so that they have the showdown, the rumble on the tumble.
Yeah, to put the tumble into context with what we've seen today, Burton Dashett was just short of a kilometre at 7.3%, and it felt sort of walking up there, because walking sort of back and forth from the finish to the buses and then back up almost to the finish for me today. I mean, it felt like it was a bit of a mission, and so no wonder Theo felt like it was hard today. I spoke to Ben Wiggins very, very briefly afterwards too, and he said final climb, particularly the way it was raced, was a lot harder than he thought it would be. The tumble for stage five is it's effectively five times that. So instead of the kilometre that we saw today, it's 5.5 kilometres. Mm. I think it also averages out at 7.3%. So the riders are going to have to go a lot longer. I think there's a question mark over Matthew Brennan, whether or not he can sustain
for that
alongside the climbing quality of Oscar Onley. We know Remco it probably suits Remco really well tomorrow.
Yeah, it's much more of a rhythm climb, isn't it? It's a fast rhythm. Who can sustain it over a longer number of minutes to get up to the top? Whereas today it was punchy classics territory. And also, I think what was really interesting, being at such close quarters on the barriers, watching them come past the three times, with just how subtly different they raced it each of the three times.
Winding up,
but also I think if they'd just come in and gone up, you might have seen a slightly different race. I think they became less kind of cautious once they knew what was involved. The pace The second and third time up was not inconsiderable. I mean, it was real fast racing. Mm. Okay, the gaps didn't really open up, but they hit it really, really hard. And I think that they gained that information from the first climb up to know, right, this is going to be an effort of what? Couple of minutes can really go full gas, and that's why it kind of all stayed together and the elastic didn't break so much. But I think it'll be a different matter on the tumble.
Extra jeopardy, a tiny bit of extra jeopardy of the cattle grid at the bottom of the climb today as well, which always just adds a little sort of soupçon. On the tight roads, before I forget, Lionel, coming away from the buses this afternoon, the Anicolor TN21 team, Harrison Woods' team, one of the staff members not only managed to, as he pulled away in the van, not only managed to scuff the Q36.5 bus, he then also managed to scuff one of their own team cars.
Oh, I'm holding
mothers do have them kind of comedy departure.
This is the hazard of manoeuvring team vehicles around, isn't it? I mean, I'm amazed it doesn't happen more often. But yeah, I mean, hopefully their insurers aren't listening to the podcast, Graham. Before we finish up on today's stage, should also just mention one other little significant thing on that final lap was that Andreas Leknesund, real quality rider for Uno X, got away. And again, my little bit of local knowledge was like, you've got to be some rider to stay away on that road before getting to the bottom of the climb. But, you know, still put it all
he
out there.
Gave it a go as well.
It a proper go, yeah. Yeah, really good racing. I mean, it's been fast the first 3 days, but without it really breaking up. And probably from watching on TV, it might look a little bit like the race is just going a little bit through the motions. But I think it's been really fast. It was fast again today. And if they race the same level of intensity tomorrow and Sunday, it's going to break up, I think, quite considerably on the tumble.
Yes, it feels like stage four, though, was the sort of gear change the race needed at this point.
We're very grateful to Lloyds for their sponsorship of the Cycling Podcast all through this phase of the season. Title sponsors of our Vuelta a España coverage, of course. Title sponsors of our Lloyds Tour of Britain coverage. They've enabled Graham and I to meet up face-to-face again here at the Lloyds Tour of Britain for the final few days. And I just wanted to mention the Great Britain team because they're wearing the jersey, the national team jersey, which has the Lloyds logo, the famous horse logo, of course, on the chest. Lloyds is title sponsors of British cycling as well, and that includes the Great Britain cycling team. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that Great Britain cycling team because it's always been a tradition in a race of this level that there will be national teams in amongst the as they are now World Tour teams. Going back to the very beginning of this modern generation of the Tour of Britain, when the race was reborn in 2004, and when you look at this year's lineup, it kind of fits the pattern of previous years. It's mostly young riders. I think the oldest is 22, and then one experienced guy. And this year, that's Matt Bostock, who's ridden for quite a lot of those domestic teams that we were talking about a few days ago, Graham, and now is kind of in this team as a sort of captain on the road. And the team is marshalled by Matt Bramier, the national team coach, who, he's experienced both on and off the bike as well. And I think when you look at the team, the one name that really leaps out is, of course, Ben Wiggins, because his father, Bradley Wiggins, won the Tour de France, won all of those Olympic medals and world titles on the track and the road, and, of course, won the Tour of Britain as well. Mm. And they've raced really well. They've had a rider in the break every day, and they've had a jersey, and they've really got stuck in. And I think that, you know, it's kind of testament to the national tour and the national team that the riders get the opportunity, and then they make the most of that opportunity.
And Joshua Golliker, who we saw in the break again today, I say again because he was the first man from the GB national team in the break on stage 1-2. He was up there, he was animating, he was challenging for the maximum points on those first four climbs, and he was you know, pushing the rest of the break all the way. He is part of EF Education Easy Posts feeder team, development team. Ben Wiggins is I mean, he's had success on the track already. So he is part of the Hagens Berman Jayco development team, rode the Tour of Hungary this summer. He is on the track junior world and European champion. He's and it's in his second season with Hagens Berman Jayco. So he's starting to put together a sort of tidy sort of early career.
Yeah, and this is a really well-worn path as well, because if you go back to 2004, 2005, those first two editions of the modern Tour of Britain, if I can put it that way, there was always a national team in the Tour of Britain. In 2005, Roger Hammond guested for the team as the experienced rider. He reached a higher, had already reached a higher level then than Matt Bostock has now, but nevertheless, he was in that kind of captain on the road role. Won a stage in Blackpool, I remember. But in that team, there was a young Geraint Thomas, a young Mark Cavendish, and a young Ed Clancy. And I think that that's pattern has been repeated several times over the years. We've seen the likes of Ben Swift and Ian Stannard, Alex Dowsett. I remember Simon Yates won a stage in Devon on Haytor while riding for the Great Britain team. And then over the subsequent years, Theo Gegenhart rode for the national team three times, along with Hugh Carthy, Ethan Hayter, James Knox, Fred Wright, Stephen Williams, Jake Stewart, Matt Walls, you know, these are all riders who have then progressed on to the World Tour level. And even in the recent years, you know, Noah Hobbs, who is also in that EF development team, who recently had an excellent Tour de l'Avenir. So there's, you know, I was talking about the ladder of progression that there is in Britain. You know, a far, far cry to the sort of the 90s and the 80s and the years before. You know, there's a real kind of joined up, you know, system that gives riders opportunities, and yeah, it's great to see them taking it.
It is, and it's also, it sort of feels like a kind of important kind of annual benchmark. And if you are one of the members of the team who is selected, then it sort of shows you two things. It shows you that there is a pathway there, and that pathway can sort of develop quite quickly. But it also shows you that you're not just coming along to make up the numbers. Mm. You're not just men riding around the UK. You are here to race too.
Yeah. This morning I saw John Herity, who is the assistant race director here, working with Rod Ellingworth in the race direction car. Now, John Herity was a pro rider himself, rode in Europe. He then was national team manager in the 2000s, probably late 90s through to the mid 2000s. And, you know, he's very experienced in the team car. And I always remember him saying something. The thing he tried to impress on young riders was, in every race you're in, someone is always watching you. You're always going to be seen, whether it's the way you drop back to the team car and get the bottles for your teammates, the way you conduct yourself on the road, even just the way you kind of go to the sign in and you sort of do the business of being a professional rider. People will form judgments immediately, because that's kind of what everybody does, especially in elite sport. And they'll look for little signs here and there. And so from the minute you put your kit on and get to the start, you're kind of on duty and you're there to be, you know, talent scouted, really. And I think that, you know, that's probably quite good advice for young riders, is to think that there's always somebody watching. There's always a way to impress. You might be rolling back through the convoy and catch the eye of somebody one day, or you might be in the break with a rider from you know, a World Tour team, and the sports director following in the car, you know, makes a few mental notes or just checks the name. You know, that's how careers are made, really.
Joshua Golliker, one more mention for him too. He was right up there on GC until, at the start of today, but he's dropped a few places. But, I mean, that's testament to the effort that he put in to the break. But he is the highest, he's not. It's Hugh Buck-Jones, who is the highest placed member of the Great Britain national team. Golliker just behind him in 37th place. Buck-Jones, 34th. But I mean, it's a good showing.
Yeah, but let's think about it tomorrow. What are we expecting with the rumble on the tumble? Let's do what we never do on the cycling podcast.
Well, I mean, that speaks for itself, doesn't it? We are expecting a rumble on the tumble.
We are. We certainly are. I mean, I would just like to see, you know, a couple of real big name riders go for it, you know, early on the first ascent of the tumble, and see what they can sort of drag away, because the the longer it's hard, I think you've got more of a chance of shaking Gregoire. I happen to think that Gregoire is probably too good a climber and a bit too savvy, even at the young age of 22, to shake off.
That Tour of Switzerland stage that he won, that was the wretched stage that was, if it was a game of football, it would have been rained off. So he's shown already this summer that when it gets hard, he's right up there and sort of game for it too.
Yes, but it is all to play for. It's two good stages, but I do think whoever is in the green jersey tomorrow night will win this year's edition of the Lloyds Tour of Britain. But, you know, I never do speculation, so let's put a pin in that for now.
Well, we're both looking forward to what should be the definitive stage of this year's Lloyds Tour of Britain. We should head out into the Cardiff night and fortify ourselves, ready for it.
Absolutely. So what, Friday night in Cardiff, then the full Welsh breakfast, and then get ourselves to Pontypool for the start tomorrow.
Sounds like a plan.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.